Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Taylor, the communication doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do. Hello, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have Samantha Sapaya, who is a sustainability strategist. Hello, Samantha.
Hey, Tanya. Thank you so much for having me on.
I'm really excited today, and I just want to tell my audience this. I'm really excited to have Samantha on today because I feel that she's a kick-ass woman, right? I feel that Samantha does definitely speak her truth. I met Samantha online from the Humans First calls, and I just love her energy. And I feel that today is not just about Samantha's story, it's also learning a little bit more about the environment. It's a learning space today, and I want to have that sort of conversation with Samantha. Okay, is that okay, Sam?
Absolutely, and please do feel free to call me Sam.
Brilliant, excellent, excellent. So I'm going to start by you asking you to explain what your job is as a sustainability strategist. What's your aim and what do you do?
Well, that in itself is a big question. So as a sustainability strategist, I'm looking for design strategies and solutions, design processes as well, in helping transition our current situations, whatever scope that might be for a business, that might be for a project, that might be in the space where I usually work, which is architecture and urban design, and helping that transition be more effective. So not just greenwashing, but really deep down, it's turning green on the inside. So that's essentially, in a nutshell, what I do as a sustainability strategist.
Brilliant. I absolutely love that. And I want to ask, were you always excited about turning green on the inside?
That's an interesting question. So oftentimes when people talk about what got them interested in the environment, right, in the natural world, I'm kind of perplexed by that question because aren't we a part of the natural world? Why are we? It's sort of like asking a fish, like, why did you decide to be obsessed with water? It's like, well, I live in it. So by default, I should be obsessed with it. It's how I live and breathe. You know, it's literally how I live and breathe. So for me, this is of utmost importance because I care very deeply about how we have evolved into being as the human species and the systems that have led to that evolution we are currently threatening. And we've been threatening my whole life, right? So this is not even a question of like when or how. This is simply something that I've felt deep in my being ever since, you know, the day I became conscious. That's how it feels to me. As a kid, I just knew that everything in the world was wrong. Mm-hmm. I just knew it. I don't know how to explain it to you. And I think you're starting to see this trend as well with the new generation, teenagers today, feeling so depressed, feeling this eco-anxiety and not really knowing where to place it or what to do with this feeling. But it's just there. It just feels like everything is wrong.
I think, you know what, I think you're right, totally right. And what's really interesting is the reason I asked you that question is because not everybody's coming from that place, you know. Some people, as you say, we live in the environment and it's obvious we should care about it. But some people don't even give it a second thought, you know, and they do the things they do. And I feel sometimes a lack of education or a lack of an understanding, because as you say, children naturally, you know, we come into this world, they naturally know they're drawn to the flowers. You know, you watch a toddler, they're drawn to the environment. They're kind of within it.
And then by taught behaviours, whether it's from their parents, whether it's from the way they've been schooled, sometimes it can we can turn into damaging beings, right? So that's kind of why I asked that question, because it's great to know that you're conscious about the environment and conscious about the world from a very young age, and you're in touch intuitively with what's happening. And I feel you're right. But with going back to the 1980s, let's say, I remember people were talking a lot about climate change at that time. Yeah. So it was, you know, but not a lot was kind of being done, but there was a lot of people that were speaking out about things. But, you know, I look back and I think, God, how have we gone from then to now? You know, what's your feelings on that, my love?
Yeah, so I have many feelings, none of them very positive. But I think one aspect of this is something that is very humans first. So it's about leadership. The fact that we have spent essentially 50 years since, you know, we first understood how to try to deal with this issue, right? Not to say we're finding solutions or anything like that, but simply to understand the issue and to learn what we need to stop doing and learn what we need to start doing. That's been, you know, that's a long time. That's two generations. So we've had the chance for a long time to do something as a human species. And if you look at what's been going on, and this is actually what I cover my public webinar series, The Global Room. So it's very interesting you asked me that question, because that's exactly what I cover over sort of, you know, 3 1.5-hour sessions consecutive days. Because if you really dig into it, what it comes down to, this is obviously my opinion, and anybody can form their own opinion from looking at the facts and how the UN, for example, has progressed through various negotiations through the years. My opinion is that we had no idea how to work together as a human species. We have never been in that situation before where we've actually had to come together as humanity to work towards a common situation, right? So you see these things all the time, like Armageddon, impact, you know, these sorts of, like, an asteroid is coming, like, we're where entire existence is about to, like, disappear if we don't work together as a species. And that's a very sort of short-term thing. So that's the sort of stories that we're telling ourselves as a culture. That's the way that we have evolved as a globalized culture, in fact. So what you're talking about with regards to expectations from society, it's okay, it's acceptable to not care about the environment in society. It's okay, it's acceptable to behave in a certain way and not to behave in a certain way. So I think it comes down to this leadership aspect for me around what stories that we're telling ourselves that we would actually have to collaborate, which is, for example, an asteroid is coming to hit us. Okay, we need to come together, First Nations, to send Bruce Willis up into space and destroy this asteroid for us, right? So that's one story that we constantly tell ourselves, but we never tell ourselves the story of, here's a really crazy, hairy, complex, intergenerational problem. Let's come together and figure out how we can create a better world so that not only do we get ourselves out of this mess, but we actually ensure that we never go back into that direction ever again. You know, that's what? Just not a story that we tell ourselves.
No, you're right. You're right. I am aware, I suppose, because there have been various kind of international meetings, isn't there, in regards to the environment, that people are finally getting together and having these conversations. And it's taken far too long. I'm totally with you. I'm a great fan. I don't know if you know, there's a reggae artist called Maccabee, and he wrote this song, I think it was early 19, saying there's a uh-oh in the atmosphere, I saw this, I had to say. And he kind of was, like, using music to kind of educate people about what was going on, you know, from all different sides. And the reason I mention that as well, because there's a lot of judgment sometimes with regards to the environment. So, for example, I was watching the BBC, this is kind of before lockdown, and Extinct Rebellion were holding up, I think it was Canning Town. They were basically on the trains, and they were, you know, the non-violent organisation. So they went and sat on the trains. And then the way that was reported by the BBC News was, oh, well, you know, the BAME community are really suffering with regards to this and not understanding the Extinct Rebellion. I was furious, because I thought at the end of the day, people are people, black, white, you know, Asian. I hated the fact that they were talking about the BAME community in terms of not caring, and it, only the elitist or people of a certain class that care about the environment, where it's actually the elitist and the people of a certain class who have created such greed and have destroyed the world. And so that really gets my back up, really, when we are really talking about the environment and we're talking about what we can do to change things, you know. And what I also want to bring into that is what's been on my mind, so I just got to get it all out, is when I'm looking at the slave trade, you know, we're looking at 46,000 slave owners, you know, within this country alone, and we're paying taxes for these people. Now, you know, the whole world, we're looking at people here. We're looking at people and we're looking at the environment. We're looking at, you know, everything as a whole. And when we are looking at slavery, as I said, right down to 2015, we have been paying taxes to these people who were dehumanizing people. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And treating people as basically as, you know, as property, you know,
right in the UK. Exactly.
So when you pull all of this together, this is all the same people who are going into the Amazon and cutting down the trees and killing all of the wild animals. You know, if you really want to put all of this together, there's a certain hierarchy, whether it's governments, whether it's large organisations, that have been destroying the planet and have been getting away with it for far too long. And I was also watching the David Attenborough show recently, and he was talking about the population of the world has increased by billions. Yeah. So there's now there's more people in the world, and we're overtaking the world. So it's become a human world rather than a world that is a world of, you know, nature, a world where we have animals, where we're all working together. It's become a real human-led world. And that is the issue. And that is why the environment has been so destroyed, because we are destroying the world. So I've got it all out there. I will continue talking. But there is just so much there that needs to be changed. And I don't know myself. I'm going to put my hands up. I can do my bit with regards to recycling. I'm having these kind of conversations. I was really upset about the extinction of the butterflies. And, you know, I've got children. My children are going to be the next generation, you know, and they already care about the environment. And we live in London as well. There's a lot of, you know, pollution, and there's a lot of people that don't value the environment in London as well. So what do you feel from your perspective? What's the way forward? What do you feel we need to do?
So you ask me this, and we're having this conversation at a very opportune moment. What we're exploring now, so myself with a team from the Global Regeneration CoLab and the Permaculture CoLab, we're actually exploring a lot of these issues in trying to understand what regeneration would look like for the Global South. And I say the Global South specifically because of the issue that you faced, colonization and globalization. Right?
Yes.
Not to say that the slave trade was invented by globalization or by the Dutch creating the VOC. It wasn't, right? But that took it to a whole other level, which decimated the entire Global South and in the process decimated the environment of the entire planet. So we go back to the start of when the Dutch decided we would create a corporation. This corporation will extract resources from lands far away that we don't care about, like our Dutch people will never see and nobody will ever understand. So it's okay for us to do this morally because those people are not human beings. That's how corporations came about and how globalization started. So the Dutch did their thing, and then guess what? The Portuguese came by and they added a few levels, right, to this. And then from that came the British. And the British were, of course, the most effective at channeling their form of colonization, their form of extraction, their form of subjugation onto many, many peoples of the world. And we don't even understand the full extent of this because these are secrets that are written down, yes, but they are kept in secret in the National Archives, for example, in the UK. And so through this history of colonization comes this sense of devaluing. Because we want to, so you mentioned greed earlier, which is really, really incredibly sort of important in this story. The reason why we have this lack of morality today in our current globalized civilization is precisely because the Dutch created something, yes, they did something with it, yes, but then it got taken by other people to say, hey, they could do this, but you know what? I can see a better way that I can profit from this while perpetuating all of this violence that I really would like nobody to ever hear about. Definitely not my grandmother. So that's essentially what happened over 500-600 years, and it's still happening today. These are the systems that led to the global capitalization that we have today, the globalized society, movement of goods, T-shirt being made in 13 countries before you pick it up at H&M. This is the situation that we've ended up with because we were able to suspend our moral values, suspend our ideas of what is valuable and what is not, because I don't recognize this tree. I don't understand this ecosystem, but I know that there is gold here that I want to come and take. I know that there are slaves here that can help me build my society, my industry. And we've just seen a few months ago, I think it was at the start of this year, actually, this report came out showing how much money Britain had taken from India during the entire period of colonization. That was 45 trillion pounds.
I know, it's just, I mean, I'm glad that things are coming out now. I'm glad that the truth is coming out. And I think that's one of the positives from social media and in terms of people speaking out and having those platforms to do that, because, I mean, that's how I heard about the 46,000 slave owners that we were still kind of paying taxes to in this country. And, you know, in, with regard to, say, you know, 45 trillion amounts of pounds of, you know, with regards to taken from India. And I'm sure we look at colonialism, you know, it's a worldly thing, really. Just look at the Commonwealth, you know, and you break it down, you look at all the different countries. I'm sure it's not just India. When we look at the amount of money that Britain alone has made from dehumanizing.
I have to add a personal thing as well. I exist only because of the British coming to where they came to in Southeast Asia. I exist only because of that.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose if you think about it, we all probably do. I mean, if I go back even with my heritage, you know, they're Syrian, you know, the Caribbean, there's all kinds of stuff all mingled up in there. And I suppose, you know, because the British mix, there's positives there as well as negatives. But I suppose not harping on about colonialism, I suppose what we want to know, or what I want to know today is from this kind of conversation with you is, first of all, I'm glad that you're doing so much, always, obviously, you know, with your sustainability strategist and the work that you're doing with your team to help, you know, Global Self and everything else. It sounds absolutely amazing. So totally commend you for that as well. But I just love a good old story. I love looking at history because I think it's so important to understand how we got here. People like to say, okay, it's only history, you can't do anything about the past. But I always feel it's important to understand the past so we can heal, then we can thrive in the future. And I feel that's where I want to go. That is the aim, to thrive in the future.
Is so important, what you've just said there. This process of healing, without healing, we cannot regenerate. Mm. Without healing, it's like you're just ignoring the fact that someone's just cut off an arm.
Yes.
You know, without having this acknowledgement, without taking time, and this happens in society, this happens over generations, you know, one act by one ship 500 years ago leads to entire generations of healing that need to happen because of the trauma that's been caused by displacement, by death, by destruction, by ecosystem, by genocide. You know, all of these things they're not simple things. These are not small things that you can just say that happened in the past. They have real implications today, not just in my ancestral line or your ancestral line, but also in the way that the City of London conducts its decision-making processes, how it spends its money, where it makes its money, where it puts its money. and the City of London runs the world, right? These things are embedded within the systems that we have allowed to perpetuate within our globalized society. And we continue to allow them to perpetuate, even though it's been shown very clearly in the entire epidemic that we're experiencing, the coronavirus pandemic. It has shown us that the world runs on labor. The world runs on our creation of labor, the public creation of labor. Yes. If people can't go to work, economies do not run. Billionaires do not remain billionaires unless they've invested in oppression, which is exactly what you're seeing happen today. So the pandemic has really, I think, brought out a lot of these. And when you talk about intersectional environmentalism, there's also been such a strong movement with the Black Lives Matter movement. I can't go anywhere without talking about that, because it's just brought it up to the mainstream. Everyone's now aware that social justice is climate justice. Climate justice is social justice. Because of the Black Lives Matter movement, we're able to see how different people have different stories. And that's actually okay. Isn't that crazy? It took us an entire movement and a near collapse of the US economy to get us to this point.
You know what? I feel it's a revelation. I know it's been horrible in the way that it's happened, but I feel it's a revelation. Because I feel now people listening, you know, with regards to Black Lives Matter, with regards to climate justice, you put it so beautifully. And I just feel that now people are starting to ask questions and they're starting to see these links and acknowledge what has happened historically, because a lot of times it's been pushed down, it's been suppressed, no one wants to talk about it, because it's just such an ugly, savage truth that no one wants to talk about. But when you learn about what's going on, and you mentioned again transgenerational trauma, this is something that affects us within us, you know, as a society. You know, no matter where you're coming from, there's transgenerational trauma. And we have to do that healing with ourselves. We have to start standing up. And even me today, having you on the show, is looking at myself and saying, you know what, I've got biases. There's things that I don't know about, and there's things that I want to learn about. You know, I'm a mother, and you know, I'm responsible for this, to help and support the next generation to push forward. And I want to do it in a positive way, you know. And that's how I'm looking at life. I'm looking at my kids thinking, God, that I want them to understand what's going on in the environment so they can make a change, because they're very environmentally aware. And I'm just seeing that these two little people are just so environmentally aware. And it's just beautiful. But I know if I don't push and I don't talk about this, that can be taken away in a second just by peer pressure, just by communities and being around some people that don't care. Sometimes if you, like, you mix in those communities, you may drop off, yeah? So you've then got to bring everybody back together. But you mentioned just so much there with regards to, like, COVID and the labour, you know, social justice. There's just so much there to harp on about. But I'm going to bring it back, because I can... turn this into just having a real rant. But I want to come back, like, to some of the people that inspired you, because obviously I love the fact that you're so passionate about it. But who are your inspirers with regards to change, with regards to people that have done positive things with regards to social justice? Who are your inspirations? Who do you kind of look to?
No one.
I love that. I need to choke some water there. That's brilliant. I love it. No one. Okay, go on.
Honestly, I don't think anyone is doing much good right now.
Okay.
Except, I mean, definitely not right now, but except the Indigenous peoples of the world. So there is no one person. I can point to a few societies who are not only doing what they do and trying to heal the earth and regenerate while they heal their societies, and have been, by the way, healing their societies for 500, 600 years. But also, they've learned our languages. They've gone to our law schools. They're studying our business in a way to try and transmute what is so evil about our society and convert this language. They're trying to reach out to us. And they're spending their entire lives doing that.
No, you made a real valid point there as well. It just, as you say that, I start thinking of tribes in New Guinea. I start thinking of the Maasai warriors. I start thinking of the Native Americans, the Aboriginals, you know, and there's been...
And very soon, they will be the only people that we can actually learn from, because we will finally start to experience what happens when we lose our stability, when we lose our economy, when we lose our forests, the way that we live, when climate change our lives, your life, my life, to the point where I have to move, then we will understand what we put those people through.
Totally, totally. And it is disgusting, you know, it is disgusting. Right now, it's almost like we're living in a bit of a Stephen King movie, isn't it? You know, if I look at it and, you know, there's some of the colour, even looking at the colours in the world or the colours of the sky, you know, everything's kind of changing if you think about it. And you're right, we have to look to the Indigenous people, because what's the beautiful thing about the Indigenous is there isn't that greed, from what I can see anyway. There's that love for humanity. There's that love for connection. There's a natural way of using our intuition, you know? And it is, and they live off the land. And you know what, it used to be like, I remember my first time when I went to Jamaica, I realised that, you know, it's a difference. This is a long time ago, but I thought there wasn't really that much homelessness. So people that were homeless, people would just feed them. They'd just give them a mango off the tree because they could live off the land, you know. So you couldn't be homeless like you are in this country. When you're homeless in this country, you know, there is no food, because we're looking at the supermarkets, you know, we're looking at local supermarkets to provide us with food. And when you're on the streets of London and you're homeless, it's a horrible place to be, you know. There's no help, there's no support really. And when you look at the Indigenous people, they live off the land, they're spiritual, they work together as a group. It's, you know, there is the hierarchy where they look to the elders and the elders support. We've lost all of that in our society. The whole family values, the whole kind of looking to the elders and maybe supporting each other and listening to each other and learning about the basics, that's a long way to get back, you know? And that is colonialism, isn't it? You know?
I want to highlight that. So all the things that you mentioned are simply just the social support.
Mm.
And living off the land is so, so much more than that. You know, it's not just living off the land. It's living in alignment with nature's principles and cycles. And the thing that we in civilized society don't even understand right now. Mm. We in civilized society do not have a scientific understanding of what that actually means, to be living in alignment with nature's principles and systems. We don't understand what that means. So are we the civilized ones is sort of this question here. Are we the knowledgeable ones is sort of this question here. And also, what is knowledge? Is knowledge what you write down, or is knowledge what you practice?
That's, you know, that's so true. You sound like my dad then. That's one of my dad's lyrics. Yeah, he always said that. He always says that with regards to when it comes to education. He always says an educated man is not necessarily what he reads, it's what he knows and what he experiences. And then absolutely, when you said, yes, and that's what I grew up with, my dad would always say. And when you mentioned that civilized society, I hate that term, absolutely hate it, because as you said quite rightly, we are not the civilized ones. The civilized ones are the Maasai warriors. The civilized ones are the Aboriginals. The civilized ones, they're in the Indigenous people. You know, they are the civilized ones. They are the ones who we need to learn from. They are the ones that we need to go back to. And you are so right. And we are so stuck in this world when we're looking at people and we're looking at, and people are reading everything from a book and without doing and without implying the experience and actually intuitively connecting. So now you hit the nail on the head then. I love what you just said there, and it was almost like my dad was talking through you just there, you know. He's passed on, you see. But that is so true, Samantha, so true. And I'm gonna have to bring this to a close now because of time, But what do you want to leave my audience with? I think we've said so much. I think it's good to just talk to let people realise what, you know, just in terms of their thinking, because it is about, I always say, in life, it's about stepping into somebody else's shoes to understand somebody else's experience. And I suppose now it's about us, from a society perspective, being able to step into maybe an Indigenous society and understand what they have been through and the damage that colonialism has caused them. So we can now think about learning from them to regenerate our world, to bring it back to what it was.
I think what I want to leave people with, there's two things. The first thing is, it's just three words. It's very easy to remember. Assume violence persists.
Lovely.
And the second thing I would love to leave people with is, be aware of your ignorance. This is the hardest thing in the world.
Of course.
But all the time, just take a breath and be aware of your ignorance.
Totally.
The more I practice that, the more I find learning opportunities in everything, spiritual development in everything, knowing what you don't know and honoring that as much as you do, or even more than how you honor what you do know.
Totally. Love that. That's a beautiful way to end the show. Absolutely beautiful. Just kind of, and I feel that so strong, to be aware of your ignorance as well. Because we're all, let's be fair, there's a level of ignorance in everyone, if we're open. Yeah. There's a level of ignorance. And if we can't acknowledge our own ignorance, we can't grow. So we'll add to that. So love that. Yeah. Brilliant.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Lovely. Thank you very much, Samantha. And I just want to say, from Samantha and from Tanya Communication Doctor, adios.
Thank you.
It was just brilliant having Samantha on the show today. There is so much to take away. First of all, looking at sustainability, I want you to think about the importance of understanding the past so we can heal. Then when we understand the past and we heal, we can thrive in the future. Now, there's lots of different layers in terms of understanding social justice is climate justice and vice versa. Also, what I could take away from Samantha is also the idea of regeneration, the idea of decolonization. And if we are to do this to move forward, it starts from self, being aware of our own ignorance. When you're aware of your ignorance and you're aware of your biases, that's the first step to recognising what you as an individual need to do. And then we will work with others. And then that's where the community and positive sustainability and positive community comes out of that. Thank you for listening. Really important podcast. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. And to listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.